Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlossophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlossophers. This is actually take two because we messed up the first time.
You messed up.
And much like the way this year has followed, so has our show. We are here for another exciting episode in the new year of 2022, and we are ready to get into this. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Spencer. Made it through 2020, barely through 2021, and now we're here, Williams.
Yeah, like that's really it.
Hey. I can just feel the energy that you're going. It's like so excited. Like,
I've made it, and that's enough for right now.
Spencer's like, I'm done. No more trying to survive a year. I just want to live. And also with us, speaking of trying to survive, we have we have part timer slash intern slash stenographer slash host of Jane on Scene. Amy is with us again.
Hey, look, Ma, I made it.
Oh my god. We're going to be talking about, as you've obviously
seen. Are you okay? You've been having a problem today.
As you can tell, Eddie's having problems today with his hosting abilities. But maybe. You know what we're going to try? Don't you dare click that button. Don't do it. Don't do
what
it.
What are you talking about?
As you can tell today,
we are entirely on a whole different wavelength in terms of what this year has brought.
What is happening?
We're going to be talking about 2021, okay? It's difficult. There's no real nice way to say it. We're just going to be jumping into that. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give them opening credits?
All right. Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlossophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlossophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlossophy101.
Yeah, that wasn't easy, was it? Yeah,
it was
jerk.
Fine.
Yeah, whatever.
It was fine, because I know I have problems speaking, so I make it the same thing every week. So,
that's right. That's very true. Good job.
Cheater.
You think about your problems and you plan around them.
So, starting in 2022, Spencer will be opening every episode
randomly different.
Exactly. As we said, we're going to be taking an opportunity to reflect, if you will, on the past 12 months, 365 days, 52 weeks, in terms of what we've been able to review on this show and what we've had the opportunity of engaging in terms of in conversation and even at a passerby of a comment here or there. So this will be a mix of everything as we look back in 2021 in review. I almost feel like we're going to have to do like the game show host voice or something for this. You decided it. I'm just going with it.
I did.
It's like, just so much cheerful.
This is your 2021 in review.
This is like the biggest lie.
That was actually a really good impression of that voice.
What? The biggest lie?
No, your game show.
Oh, no.
Approved. Chick, chick.
As we look back on this year, we're going to be combing over our last episodes, all the episodes from 2021. We're going to be going through some of the high points, some of the low points, because let's be honest, it seems like we're just literally barely on the outskirts of the destruction and mayhem from 2020. And so 2021 wasn't too far off. And so, you know, there are low points. And even taking a look back at some highlights from the show itself and great conversations we've had. So it's interesting because we talk about 2021, and mind you, yes, it definitely was not 2020. That's a given for sure, but it still kind of stunk. It was still a hard year to process through, not just in terms of movies. I'm not talking about just movies in general, but just the world around us. I mean, we still are on the edge of what's going on. No, not even on the edge. We're still in the midst of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Everything is still going on. In fact, if not even more so now, it's gotten to a level to where we might be back to where we were in 2020. Who knows? But with everything going on, we still had a chance to take breaks away from the real world and engage in other people's fantastical worlds with movies and conversation. So I want to go ahead and go around the table, and we're going to be talking about some of those points, some of those films from this past year, because despite it being a very mixed bag of movies this past year, there were still a few highlights. I mean, there were still a few that stuck out. And the thing is that we're just reviewing the movie. We're going over the movies that we reviewed this past year.
So some old, some new, so some even borrowed, if the, exactly, some blue.
No one's getting married. Spencer,
what?
Do you know something
in
we're doing?
Summer no. Fling, there was 51st Dates, and Spencer? They got married.
Spencer?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess.
Spencer?
Well, yes.
I was thinking Palm Springs, but still, whatever.
That's on my list.
So, mind you, like I said, this past year, it has been a mixed bag of different things, mixed bag of movies. And mind you, even though we have made it every effort to try to bring the best of whatever we could to this stage, if you will, to this table, there were a couple that were stinkers, and there were a couple that were kind of winners, and then there were a couple that were just like, what did we just watch? So I kind of want to open up the gate and kind of talk about a couple of our best reviews that we've done. And I'll go ahead and throw it over to Amy, since Amy's already mentioned about some that are on our list.
I'm doing that whole thing where I just stop and think for a really long time, and it's the dead air. So I actually have a really long list for this year that turned out to be some surprisingly good ones. And even though I'm just supposed to pick one, I'm going to start out with Lesson 277, Palm Springs.
Really?
Yeah. So it was the final entry into our Summer Fling, selection, mm-hmm. which was really awesome because it was a project I got to spearhead. But the actual, the recommendation came from Spencer, yeah. and it turned out to be, it was a Hulu movie, and it turned out to be so flippin' awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was unexpected. It didn't have a massive runtime. It was original, and I'm game to watch it any time of the year.
Yeah, that particular movie kind of took us all aback because I didn't get a chance to see it when it first came out. Amy, you had mentioned you hadn't gotten a chance to see it when it first came out.
Yep.
You were literally the only person. The person who doesn't see anything is the only...
I see stuff. I'm on a movie podcast.
Amy, name a movie.
Which one?
Any movie.
One.
Have you seen The One?
Yeah, with Jet Li.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice.
Wow.
Ha!
Ha! I was waiting for you to pick like some kind of period movie or whatever.
Why would I do that?
Because that's what you do.
I haven't seen Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, if that's what you're
Neither
thinking.
Neither have I, but I read the book, so I was like, meh.
Oh,
There's a book.
Yeah, of course there is. Moving on to Palm Springs and how amazing it was.
Speaking of Palm Springs,
the dead stare at me was like, well, I didn't break this.
You
this
did was break
not
it.
A visual medium.
It could be, though.
You know, I keep telling you both that almost every episode.
And I'm telling you, it is not a visual medium. Thank you.
So, it was such a surprise because I'm not typically a fan of a lot of the folks that are in that movie.
Adam Sandberg.
Adam Sandberg. Andy Sandberg.
They played the one where they were Adam Sandler and Andy Sandberg played dad and son in, what is it, Hot Rod?
Are you
My boy.
That's my boy. There you go. Yeah, that's where I get him confused. Also, we had an Adam Sandler movie in that sequence too for Summer Fling. So yay.
So anyway, this particular movie, it was honestly a real big surprise because number one, we already had not a very good track record already with streaming films, mm-hmm. especially originals. When it comes to original streaming films that are either Netflix-based or Hulu-based or whatever the production studio is, they don't usually knock it out of the park. But you got Andy Samberg, you had Kristen Milioti, you got J.K. Simmons. Mm-hmm. It was a really unique cast of characters that made for a really fun experience. Like, and that's all thanks to you, Spencer. God knows how you fell into that whole vein of...
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you exactly how. So I think this was back when my computer even needed like cleaning or something. I needed to take it apart. And so I went downstairs where we had this big table. And my roommate had just turned it on. And so like I was cleaning it and like it was just on in the background. And I started like... It kind of sucked me in because I was like, oh, this is actually interesting and good. And then I was like, this is on Hulu and they made it. I'm like,
yeah,
it's happening. So yeah, that was when I watched it.
Grimace face, sad face. Yeah, we got to talk out the emojis like Siri. Go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah, so that's how I first experienced it. It was probably like a week or two after it came out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why I was so impressed with it.
That's really cool because I don't even know why it fell under my radar. Like, it's accessible because it's on Hulu. Mm-hmm. And I know people were talking about it. People had mentioned it, but I just didn't get a chance to see it. And it just fell by the wayside.
It was 2020. A lot was happening.
Was it during 2020?
It yes. released during 2020, but it was reviewed during 2021.
Yes.
Yep.
Now I'm interested in
yep.
Palm Springs movie. Yeah, this movie was actually
2020 right there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I was wondering like when 2020.
In the midst of our, it was May. Right when it happened and everyone was still yearning for the outside.
It was May.
It says January.
January.
Okay. Nah.
No, that's Sundance. That doesn't count.
Oh, July 10th.
Yep.
So you know why? Because number one, this one had wanted to do, we had planned to do the.
He's pointing at me, by the way.
I'm pointing at something or someone.
You said this one and then pointed at me. It
I'm
wasn't
talking
the
about
laptop.
Jet Li, the one, okay?
he is the one.
We had been talking about doing the musical ones, remember?
What?
During 2020, the musical films. Like Shrek the Musical and Hamilton came out around that time.
Yeah, but that was in 2020 proper. That's yeah. Right. Because so there was Little Shop of Horrors that was in that one too.
No, but I'm saying though, Hamilton was making its big, streaming debut. So it makes sense. What are you doing?
I'm listening.
You
I don't
literally
need to be
have
on
your
top
lips
of the mic
on
all
your,
the time.
No, but I'm looking at you and you look like a sad child who's sitting on the stoop waiting to go outside to go play like that. Look at that, Spencer. Like, I feel like I should give you a lollipop because of your sadness.
I'd rather have a dill pickle from a barrel, please.
Yep, she's still on that black hole excursion. So,
so Hamilton came out in July of 2020, and
we focused more on that, and we didn't get a chance to kind of redirect back to any streaming films. So that makes sense. What about you, Spence? Was there any film that stuck out to you from last year that was a highlight, that was actually a good one?
Yes, and that would be Luca from the summer.
Ooh.
Lesson 273. That was just the movie I needed at the time. It was a very bright, cheery movie at a time that was bright and cheery back when we thought, hey, maybe this is the end of this pandemic. That was such a long time ago. I don't know who that person was because they died.
Oh my gosh.
But Luca was just a delightful movie with like a really excellent like Italian score just like undermining it. It just gelled so well together with the music and the theme and just the animation that it just makes you want to get some gelato and ride a Vespa.
Signor Vespa.
And then find someone named Bruno and tell them, Silencio Bruno.
It was so good.
It was.
It was so delightful, and considering what we had started the year with, even though it showed up in November of 2020, which was Soul, but it was reviewed, I think, in January or so. Luca was just, it was a bright spot. It took us to the Italian Riviera. It made us think of childhood friends, and it was just like, it was a warm ball of sunshine. I felt it. Also,
in your black hole.
Shut up.
So,
my gosh, seriously, seriously.
Hey, we're not
talk about Jacob Tremblay or whatever.
Tremblay, get it right.
Is he the one from Doctor Sleep or not Doctor Sleep?
He's the one from Doctor Sleep. He's also done other things, but apparently, it's just fried in your brain that he's the one from Doctor Sleep.
He was screaming. I can't think of little.
Children were screaming.
Yes, thank you from Hook. That's great.
I think one of the best things about this particular movie was the fact that we got an opportunity to see what Pixar does best, and that is not only just portray a culture or a group of people well enough, but also just mimic, and not just mimic, but even like honor and respect the people and the traditions and the culture to a T. Like, it's so beautiful how you see a lot of these things that are going on in the film and you're wondering like, oh, well, is that what it's really like? Or is that? And then you watch the behind the scenes stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're actually in the places that look exactly like the places in the movie. And they're like, they're talking to the people and they're getting to know the people. It's really refreshing to see filmmakers take that much respect and they honor the source material of where most of their stuff is coming from in a way that people who are of that culture or of that tradition or of that, you know, just livelihood can actually feel like this is something they could have grown up with. You know, it goes back to their work with like in Coco. You know, when Coco came out, my family, who is Latin, they're Mexican and Puerto Rican and Cuban, they fell in love with the movie and they found themselves enthralled with all the things that they remember from when they were a kid, like my aunts and uncles, my grandparents, they all got a chance to see it and they all loved the movie. And watching it being represented on screen and being able to vividly recognize glimpses of your own past in a film that was made today, that's pretty powerful. And we've talked about it before, the difference between what Disney Animation Studios does and what Pixar does. And even though they both do 3D animation and they both bat for the fences for that emotional, you know, evocation of emotion, you still have that huge front runner with Pixar because it just seems like there is just that much more care and effort to not only reflect it, but to honor it. You know, and I think that's one of the biggest differences, you know, between what they do. Disney Animation Studios, who did recently Encanto, we talked about that. I forgot what lesson that is, like 296, 294. 294! Nice. Yeah. like the reflection of the culture is there. And you can see it, and you can see it respected in the history that they, you know, they showcase and the honor and tradition that happens in the food. But in terms of anything more than that, a lot of it is just regular stuff. Like a lot of it seems to be very like nowadays things, in terms of depth, in terms of, you know, the ability to reflect the culture itself in those times, as opposed to going back to Coco. There is such a deep rootedness in not only the traditions and the aspect of what they do, but you know for sure that they are going to showcase you something that is that is not only reflective, but it's actually an extension of the culture they're in, you know? So, I mean, it's just, it's there's no doubt about it. It's just great. And with what Luca does, it's phenomenal.
Do you have one?
Oh, yeah, we're doing this.
You're just like, wait, no, I don't have to talk now. We're talking about Luca.
I would have to say one of my favorites from this past year has, like, without a doubt, has to be the episode that we did. Let me see if I can find it. I think I passed it.
Da, 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 da. This is where we need a
Yeah, bring back the music.
Oh, yeah, bring back the music. The Suicide Squad film that we reviewed.
Yay!
Like, that was the fun. Suicide
Squad. That was surprising.
Lesson 278, The Suicide Squad.
Again, the is important, or you're watching a completely different garbage movie.
Please. Yeah, it is. This Suicide one, goes. Delightful.
Yeah.
This one, more playful, gave space for everybody. They brought back Margot Robbie and who plays Amanda Waller?
Viola Davis.
Yes.
Her in that haircut, like, just I disassociate her from Viola right? Davis.
Like, that's the thing. She's Amanda Waller, and I'm like,
is it just me, or does she look like the mean teacher in the class that you know you're going to go into in like the next grade or two, and you're like, you see her walking down the hall. Oh, I don't want to be in her class. But you see her and you know it's going to happen. That's what I feel like every time I see Viola Davis play this character. I look at her and I'm like, I know she probably means well, but she's just not a good person. Like, and
I think I've always stated that if a actor can make you love or hate a character, or more importantly, hate a character and their portrayal in then they are an amazing actor. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that Viola Davis is scary, like scary good in this. And it's like that. And then Sylvester Stallone is King Shark. Is the
so great.
It's so great and so sweet. And I'm just like, I want to hug you, but you're going to eat everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the movie itself had a lot of great things going for it. Like Idris Elba in the DCEU. How awesome is that? That we got a chance to see Idris Elba play a superhero character. And maybe it's not the one that everybody thought he should have played, but he's in it now, you know?
Well, then we got, I almost said Michael York, and it's not Michael York.
Michael Rooker.
Thank you.
He's like Michael York.
My brain went, Michael.
The old Michael, man. Michael. I don't even think he's alive anymore.
I don't know if he's still alive. Please don't, because I know him from Cabaret, but then you're going to bring up Austin Powers, and I don't need to deal with
no,
that.
No, he was
Basil.
Logan's Run.
Oh, that's right, too.
I forget. So you got a lot of surprises with this one, because that's what they were like really kind of highlighting. Oh, there are going to be all these new characters that you've never seen and blah, blah, blah. I mean, with Michael Rooker as Savant, you had John Cena as Peacemaker. You had Nathan Fillion as TDK. You had
Pete Davidson as somebody.
Pete Davidson as Blackguard. You had Jai Courtney as Captain Boomerang again from the first film. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had Flula Borg who played Javelin. There was a whole bunch of these people. Sean Gunn, James Gunn's brother, playing Weasel.
Which is brilliant. It was so dumb and so brilliant.
It was great. It was absolutely perfect. And then obviously, like you said, we had Sylvester Stallone playing King Shark, which even without knowing it, just hearing that voice... Mm-hmm. It was almost like, this is Rocky at age 100. Like, because it just sounded like, oh my gosh, this man is, he's so iconic, you recognize him even at his slowest. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what that says about the man or about his characters, but either way.
Well, and then we had Taika as Ratcatcher, Taika Waititi,
Ratcatcher.
Oh, yeah. And then Ratcatcher 2. I can't remember her name, but...
Daniela Melchior.
She was so delightful. And her little rat friend, Simon, I was like, meep. It's like, he wants to give you a gift. And everybody's like, aw. And then he just almost like, no, I don't want it. And we're like, just shake the little rat's hand. It'll be great, man. It'll help you. Just do it. It'll be great.
Well, and I mean, we're missing out on like one of the best and key people in the film, and that's the Polka Dot Man, David Dasmalchian. I mean, he was absolutely phenomenal in the movie. Like, his whole issue with his mom on top of like, and you know what's funny?
You think about it, makes me laugh.
One of the first places I saw him in was
Ant-Man?
No, before that.
You saw him before Ant-Man?
Yeah, he was in Sushi Girl.
Oh, that weird Mark Hamill, not mafia one.
It's. I mean, I remember him. There it is. From I just.
I like that. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, just Control F this.
I mean, mind you, he had done other things prior to that, but he's great in this movie, and I love him in this because he plays the getaway driver in part of the film. But that's where I remember him from, huh?
In Sushi Girl, not in Sushi Girl. The Suicide Squad.
No, he plays the crazy person in The Dark Knight. That's what I remember.
Oh, he's Scarecrow.
No, he plays the crazy person, the one who's like, who can't stop laughing and smiling. Remember, he's one of the Joker's thugs.
This was such a nice, like, delightful experience. And the fact that the costume department made his cat a polka dot cat outfit and he took pictures, it just
he found the cat on set. He found him on set.
He adopted polka dot cat.
What?
Did you not hear this?
No.
It was all over. So it was all over social media that David had actually found a cat while on set. And so he ended up keeping the cat, and while they were on set, he kept the cat in his trailer. And so the designers, the wardrobe department, heard that he had a cat, and so they ended up making a polka dot suit for the cat.
And he took pictures with the cat in the polka dot suit, and his name is now Polka Dot Cat. Like, it's just really sweet and very reminiscent of what the prop department did for Emma Watson's hamster when she passed away on Harry Potter.
What did they do there?
They built her a little tiny satin-lined coffin with a nameplate to put the hamster in so that they could give her a service and bury her.
By the way, that was on the
Harry Potter reunion
thing.
I haven't watched it.
So yeah, this is the outfit they made for the cat. So
it's a nice one. If you have time, Google polka dot cat.
Google polka dot cat. But yeah, I have to say, like, this one was a huge refresher from the last one. And the fact that it was put in the hands of somebody who is genius as James Gunn, who has vision and is able to do, ultimately able to set out what every nerd, you know, nerd's wet dream is out there. Like, he executed it perfectly. It was great. So that is easily one of my high points for last year. What about you, Ames? Do you have any other ones that you have, since you have this expansive?
I have a whole bunch.
Okay, give us another one.
I like being able to just delete things off my list and go, somebody else covered it.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to bring up, reviewed in August, Lesson 280, coming out at A24, The Green Knight.
I knew you were going to do this one.
Of course you were.
I honestly knew you were. And mind you, it was interesting because, so the story it hails from is like so obscure. Like, it's known, like, if you take classes or if you pay attention in English, like, you're aware of it then.
I like that you're just looking at me going,
because this is your movie.
You're forcing
this was
people,
your movie. Why
you're forcing people into this movie?
No, that's not. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is,
that's what he was saying.
Anyway, what I was saying was is that this is a very obscure story, and for A24 to pick it up. And I believe the director for this one was David Gordon Green.
I believe you are correct.
Because David Gordon Green has done... Oh, we didn't even do tags for this one.
That's you got so excited that the movie that I picked and was really excited for years for... Was it years? I think it was for years. Because I had seen
David
the trailer.
Lowry.
I seen the trailer, or I seen the trailer. Wow.
I see the trailer.
I seen the trailer. I saw the trailer. I got really excited and I texted you and I was like, oh my gosh, have you seen the Green Knight trailer? And you saw it and you're like, you don't watch horror movies. Is this going to be okay whenever it comes out? You want to see this? And I'm like, yes, I want to see this.
Just like that too, by the way. She was like, I want to see
this. Yes, just like that.
Give me a toy candy.
Spencer, help.
Wow. And a butterscotch.
A butterscotch. Werther's for days. But yeah, it is a little more of an obscure tale. It's not Monty Python. Easily recognized because of Monty Python. It's a little deeper for your Arthurian legend, but the concepts that are in it, as well as the tropes, have been long-lasting and long-standing. And again, it is an Arthurian legend. And it was just such a delight to see not only the color, but the way that it was handled. The land, the shots, some of the shots were absolutely just gorgeous. And Dev Patel surprised me. And I still hold a very deep-seated oh heck no techno for his shenanigans in Avatar. So, Last Airbender, Avatar.
Why? Why do you even bother remembering that movie?
A whole another year without you
mentioning
that.
Because that's the one thing that when I look at his broad scope of work, I went, that is the no that I can...
No, too many people in that movie said yes when they should have said no. And, like, I can't blame some of those people.
Yeah, you can.
Like, once you're in it and you know it's bad, can you just leave?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could. You can say no and step down. So I have
people do that all the time.
I've kind of held it. Well, I've held it against him. No, he is a very good actor, but that movie is just tainted. This movie, on the other hand, is so wonderful, so
it's
well done.
Tainted?
No, it is untainted. It's so tinted.
Is it, so that's tinted why you didn't add green. It to your black hole one. Okay, just making sure.
That joke was from last year. Let it go.
Bring it up.
She's going to dad jokes over here.
What are some of
I haven't
go?
Seen you said last year.
I have never. I didn't get to say it this entire week. I needed to say it at least once. Yeah, this is brilliant. It is unexpected. It's delightful. And coming out of A24, yes, please.
It was actually sorry.
Sorry that Jan was not.
Oh my gosh. It was surprising. Like, it was one of those ones where Spencer and I, we had just seen the trailers to it, or even just the posters. I don't even know if we've seen the trailers. And we weren't even sure of it at all. And then Amy was like, no, you guys have to watch it. It's a great story. It's this, this, and that. And me and my minimal thinking, I thought, oh, A24, okay, maybe there's a horror aspect. Nope.
I mean, they do other things.
Oh, I know, but who cares?
They have a fourth, don't they have a forthcoming movie with Michelle Yao?
Yes, I was just looking it out. I'm very excited about it.
Sorry, we're really excited about that.
Would look very cool. Excited. It looks like Google it has.
So the show just Google turned into a Minion reunion. Banana! Just yelling over here. Yeah, they're known for some other things. But I mean, even that Michelle Yao one looks a little trippy. It looks a little psychedelic.
It looks very good.
It looks very good. That's not purring. That's neither here nor there. I'm just saying A24 has made a name for itself with the infamous films of horror that it does.
Lamb.
That was this past year.
Malignant? Was that them?
No.
I don't know.
That was James Wan.
Oh,
but you're,
I don't do horror.
You're thinking Hereditary, Midsommar, The Witches. Those are all A24. And mind you, A24 is more of an artsy type, you know, studio. But still, I didn't know what to expect going into it. And thankfully, I'm glad I went to go see it because it was definitely a right turn from what I was expecting. I honestly thought I was going to have to struggle with like staying awake. And it was actually really refreshing. Like, the tale that it told and the way it told it was so unique and different with the incorporation of the color palettes of each scene and the color palette of the entirety of the environment and the usage of sound and light and, you know, contrasting colors and the way certain things that, I mean, and then the way the film just wrapped up. The film wrapped up like it was giving you a gift in the final, you know, 20 minutes of the film. And that was incredible. And it was definitely a story to continue to pass on and watch and understand, because it was definitely one that I would like to see again. And of course, I'm not going to go to the theaters because it's not in the theaters. I think it's out on Vudu now?
I believe so, yes.
I don't know. What did you think of it, Spence?
What were we talking about again?
The Green
my
Knight.
God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was one where I was like, I don't know if I talked about this the first time, where like, it's just like, watch this really poor quality rip of this movie.
Oh, and you didn't have part of the end of it?
No, I had the end. I had the whole movie.
No, I think he's talking about how he was complaining about the it was too dark. He didn't see a lot of the dark scenes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you did talk about that. It was kind of funny.
It's an ongoing problem with movies, is being too dark when I'm trying to watch them at the drive-in.
There you go. Mm.
But this wasn't a drive-in. It's on a laptop, so.
Wow. Well, then, we're going to move past the legalities of this conversation and go into your next favorite, Spence.
You don't know what I did? Could be perfectly legal for all
the,
you
the
know.
The director send you a copy? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Good friends with old what's his face?
You didn't even. Oh yeah, good friends. All right, good friends indeed.
Good friends with old what's his face?
Who's a what's its?
Galore.
My turn for a good movie
or a bad movie. What do you got? Looks like you're struggling there. So let me open the floodgates a little bit more for you. Do you have a bad one? Or, you know, if you want to talk about a bad one, we can talk about a bad one.
I'd like to talk about a bad one.
Okay, let's talk about a bad one. Let's break up the monotony.
Let's talk about Justice League, the movie that keeps coming back.
Which apparently will have been absolved coming another movie shortly. Like everything, the Flash movie apparently will get rid of everything in Justice League. I have no idea.
We're still
stuck
in 2021.
But the Crusaders were on these episodes, so let's go.
Yeah.
He's like, speaking of bad, the Crusaders get.
We had margaritas.
Yeah, you did. All of you did.
They were delicious.
So, Justice League. The whole thing that brought that version of the movie about was terrible. It was an online campaign that just harassed everyone until people got what they wanted. And I always thought it was a bad idea to give in to that kind of, like, thing, because you're just telling people, yeah, harass like a bunch of people and then you can get what you want. And so I'm like, I like, even before we even get into like the movie itself, it has like this taint on it from that, and then also taint on it from the previous Justice League film.
He's talking about black holes again.
We're using the, I know, right? He's just on this thing when you use the word taint as in tainted.
Black holes. Ay.
This movie's tainted for multiple reasons.
Because of black holes.
I don't vouch for this man or anything he says.
Yes, he does.
But yeah, it's just, it has like a lot of baggage. I don't think I've ever watched a movie with so much baggage before I've even seen it. Like, it's,
that's true.
It's a very unique viewing experience before you even like really set up. And then you start watching it and then you're dealing with a whole bunch of different Zack Snyder decisions for this movie. Of being in black and white, of being in 4:3, which
true.
Like, I get that might work.
Wait,
well,
we didn't see it in black and white, did we? I don't remember seeing it in black and white.
Oh, that's right, I forgot.
No, it was an option after the fact. Yeah,
yeah. Justice is great.
Because, yeah.
For some reason, that became the dominant version in my mind, even though I never watched that version.
Because you just looked at how far of ridiculousness this movie went, and you're like, as soon as it hit the stopping point, you're like. There. That's where the stupidity ends. This is where it's...
I'm not gonna...
You have to. You already opened Pandora's box.
Well, the thing...
Or Zack Snyder's box, whatever you're talking about.
Zack Snyder's box of ridiculousness. Like, I get the idea of, like, doing it for, like, IMAX and that kind of thing, or that's at least what he said, but, like...
Did he even make it to IMAX?
Yeah. I don't know, and that's the main problem I have. I don't know if this thing ever ended up in IMAX.
I believe it did, but that's the... Again, that was the thing that... You hit the nail on the head. People were, poke. And as soon as you give in one... Everybody's like, well, I deserve this. I'm like, you don't deserve poodiddles. Like, calm down. Yeah. This is not for you anymore.
It really did open up that
the poo gate.
The Pandora's box, if you will.
It was a poo gate.
It also, like,
you know what the poo gate is?
Where Winnie the Pooh hangs out.
It's the a black hole.
It's the gate at the edge of
the poo,
of the Hundred Acre Black Woods.
Hole. A taint.
And
you guys were talking Blue about
Bear
taints.
Hangs out at it. No, we're talking. Taints? This is tainted. Stop.
Black hole. No. So this movie really. But no. To what you were saying.
Yeah.
It's true. This whole conversation with Zack Snyder actually coming back and creating this mess of a film that we saw. It opened up that whole floodgate, if you will, to every other movie out there that had a horrible first run. All of a sudden have this second chance, you know, opportunity, because there has to be another version, because if this movie's out there and it's that bad, it probably wasn't meant to be that bad.
We're
the studio
looking at you, not the Suicide Squad, just Suicide Squad.
I know. The well, second
bring
this
back
came
the
back, air's cut like everywhere. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Well, and I know there's another thing that they were talking about. They were talking about I believe they were saying something about the second Amazing Spider-Man film, that there's a there's another cut to that they want to bring out. That
they just want the deleted scenes put in there so that they can be like, we can have a Spider-Man, an Amazing Spider-Man 3.
And then, yeah, and actually there's a big push now that the thing is that people are saying, since Andrew Garfield did so well in No Way Home, that, spoiler alert, blah, blah, blah.
It was already spoiled. You brought it up in the actual episode.
If they didn't hear that episode.
Spoilers.
That's what I just said. If Andrew Garfield did so great in No Way Home, then that means that we have to give him a second chance for Amazing Spider-Man 3 and blah, blah, blah.
Tobey Maguire already acknowledged that he was amazing. So I was like, thank you. You did exactly what the people that won.
Here's the thing, though. Tobey Maguire
is one
of the... I
appreciate Tobey. Leave him
alone. His on-screen portrayal...
He can stare down people.
He does. This man, which isn't that tall, this small man... has a very large vendetta against paparazzi. And mind you, they deserve it most of the time.
We'll show you that video.
Oh my gosh.
It's brilliant. But he looks like he's going to burn
through. There's like
your
a
soul.
Meme of him like doing the whole hand pointing like this. Like, yeah, doing the whole, like that kind of thing. But with his hand. It's true. Amy, keep talking so I can look
this up. But Tobey Maguire isn't the problem here. The problem is that Zack Snyder's, and I said Snyder's? Justice League at this cut was not necessary. Nope. If I have to see the same movie in six different versions to get the real version, then no. Though, I'm not going to lie, I appreciate Blade Runner and having the final director's official cut.
Sorry,
I found
it.
Oh my gosh, you found it.
The law!
He's so angry.
The law!
He deserves to be able to live his life in peace at this point.
Why? Wait, I'm sorry, what? Who said that?
Me.
Oh, okay. Everybody deserves to live their life in peace.
Paparazzi bully people. I don't like a lot of what I
saw the Britney Spears documentary. I know it's true. I'm just kidding. I saw it still, but I'm not kidding. She's already freed.
Hashtag freed Britney with a D.
But yeah, no, I have to agree. I think this movie did more harm than good than it can imagine for the whole cinematic history, not just for the Disney the DC extended universe, and not just for superhero movies in general, but for any movie. I mean, it's giving the power in the hands of people who are not the decision makers. And mind you, we get upset most of the time at the decision makers, you know, for films or whatever. But here's the thing. That's what they get paid for. That is literally their job. If something goes down, if the dominoes fall, if all blah, 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 guess who gets blamed? The person who makes the decisions. And it goes back to them.
Well, okay, see, and then this is also complicated by the whole fact that this is done by Warner Brothers in DC.
And
because after the year they've had...
not even before that. Like, it's they are bad at their jobs, and that does not help things because, like, really, it feels like someone should come in and intervene, but not the way those people did. Because, like, the original Justice League made so little sense that this movie and its 4-hour madness length makes more sense. Not more satisfying, but it makes more sense. But
this also had more Ray Fisher in it, too.
Yeah, well, I mean...
And then don't even get started on that whole mess, too.
And that's the problem where this is... There is more bad in this movie and what it did to not just polarizing people, but essentially giving everybody with a keyboard and a vindictive will...
And a social media account.
An entitled personality to go... basically harass people until they got things that they wanted.
Yeah.
And within that story, we still got to see, way more Cyborg. We got to actually see Amazonians who were like not dressed in a bikini for just because they wanted an upskirt shot.
Just
like,
kidding.
Yeah. So there were good parts to it, but there was so much more that doing this movie, having it come out, having us for the 4 hours, we're like, okay, it's break time. Like, this is a part-time job watching this movie. I wasn't paid to watch this movie. I'm interning. And it made me so angry. And I'm just like, if you're going to do that, then do you know what you need to do? You need to slip into everybody's digital accounts and be like, boop, deleting all of your other versions. Oh, what is this? The Zack Snyder cut has shown up. Surprise. It's like, what did they do, Apple, where they gave everybody
mad about that. I remember.
Brilliant.
I don't have any Apple products.
Everybody with an iTunes account got that
YouTube album,
and they hated it. And I'm like, if you had done that.
Was
like,
it the album or just the song?
No, it was the album.
The whole album.
It was the entire album. And I was like, if you had done that with the Zack Snyder cut and all the other ones and just swapped it out, I'd be like, oh no, it happened. Whoops. Ta-da.
I think, though, that this also... what this does is it really kind of showcases there. I mean, and mind you, I'm not an elitist. I'm not somebody who feels like there has to be somebody on top and there has to be somebody on the bottom and there has to be people in the middle so that way society can work. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying there are people who are put in these positions for decisions like this. And if somebody as easily as a, you know, Joe Schmo with a keyboard and a computer and a Twitter account can have the ability to topple over decisions that are made, who knows? I mind you, yes, Justice League, the first one was garbage, hot garbage. And there are other movies that came out from other studios or whatever. Some of them were good. Some of them were great. Like, we were just talking about The Suicide Squad. The Suicide Squad, which was also put out by Warner Brothers, was great.
Yeah.
Now, what is the difference between the Suicide Squad and Justice League? I mean, other than goodness and badness.
I don't know. I get like a vibe that there was less interference with the Suicide Squad.
Correct.
Yeah, I agree.
Even though I don't have no background knowledge, but it just feels like that.
I feel like James Gunn was given pretty much full creative control, which yeah. Yep. I think we talked about it in the episode that probably was the case because it felt like it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying though is like the decisions that were made that allowed for this film to get successful, pretty sure some of those same decisions were put in place for this movie, and it just was a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's only so many ways you can beat a dead horse before it just becomes ground beef or, you know, ground meat. You know, it just, no matter how much you push and push and push, you can't get gold out of poop. Like, you just can't. And all that they did and all they, if you were to give everybody the opportunity to create a 4-hour version of their movie, yeah, you're going to get everything you've wanted in that movie as much as you could, so that it can give the proper exposition. It can have all the action scenes that you really wanted. Like, heck, if the first Hunger Games was 4 hours long, we would be like, not only would we be so excited.
I'd learn about Sal in the market, and then we'd have a lot more flashbacks, and there'd be so many excursions into the wild.
But what I'm saying is, with that much time, with that much time, you could explore all those things.
And I would be asleep.
But that's exactly, that's not how movies work. Movies are not meant to take up half of your day just so that you can get the picture.
Unless it's Annie or Fanny and Alexander, which is like a 4 or 5 hour movie.
Yeah, but that was back in the day. I think that's also a French film.
Yes.
I believe so.
Austrian.
But like we've seen other films, though. We've seen movies that are like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and they get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things that were allowed to happen because of this push for this Snyder cut that I feel like we have yet to see the peak of how much chaos it has unleashed on the cinematic world. And I say that, mind you, with a little bit of trepidation and hoping that it doesn't. Like, I hope we have yet to, but I feel like there's still, like, even now with the Spider-Man movie,
mm-hmm.
the recent one that came out, there are people that are grumbling about, we were just talking about The Amazing Spider-Man 3,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the stuff from Amazing Spider-Man 2, and, you know, Andrew Garfield, and blah, blah, blah. I feel like it's still there. I think we're just waiting for that right time where all the people rise up and really push their luck for what they can do. Well, I'll leave that one because I know it's probably one of yours. But one of my favorites from this past year, I have to admit, came from a streaming service.
What?
And I have to admit, it was a toss-up between two Netflix films, Concrete Cowboy and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Oh, like Chadwick. Both,
you have Chadwick Boseman, you had Viola Davis. You had a slew of a cast from Ma Rainey's, and then Concrete Cowboy, which had Idris Elba, had a slew of actual Concrete Cowboys from Philadelphia in the film, and it was just an incredible movie. It was starting with like, and I'm putting them both in that same spot for me because they're both, I'm not going to pick another Netflix film, but these two are on equal level of probably the best streaming service films I have seen this past year. Concrete Cowboy was such a different kind of movie for me. Watching these people who live in Philadelphia, very much like Philadelphians, they're very, you know, they're very urban. They're very much about, you know, the neighborhood and what's going on in the current day. Like, we're talking about like maybe in the last 10 years. But at the same time, in some of the projects and some of the areas, the buildings they have, they converted them into stables, and they have horses in Philadelphia, and some loophole in the law allows them to ride horses in Philadelphia. And it's like, that is cool. And to see the exploration of that. Oh, and the kid from Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. I forget his name. I feel bad. But
isn't it like Caleb something?
It is.
I thought it was Caleb something. I'm on that boat with you.
Okay, cool.
But
we're like, Caleb. Young fella next to Idris Elba.
Exactly. Little Idris Elba. but the movie was so great and it was so fresh. Caleb McLaughlin. There you go. And so new and so unique. Like, I don't recall seeing a movie like it. And it just blew me away. And much like in that same fashion with Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, that was such a powerful movie. Mm-hmm. And for it being at the beginning of the year, it might have been like, what, our second film that we reviewed?
Ma Rainey's, I think, was the first or second, yeah.
Got to take a look.
Because it is like right down there at the bottom. I think Soul is the...
Soul is the first one.
Yep.
So that makes it second. Yeah, so I was right, second film. But Ma Rainey's Black Bottom was such an exploration in what the blues really exemplifies and how that power, even in the most briefest of moments, that African Americans in then times could hold in the power of music and how easily how quickly those towers topple. And you had just a powerhouse of a cast for this movie. You had, like you said, this was one of the last times we got a chance to see Chadwick Boseman. Mm-hmm. And this movie actually had, I believe Denzel was a producer.
Oh yeah, he was in like a featurette or something.
Yeah. Viola Davis, Chadwick Boseman, Coleman Domingo, which we've seen Coleman Domingo in plenty of things from the recent Candyman film. He was also in Fear the Walking Dead. Glenn Turman, Michael Potts. The movie has a really great array of different folks in this movie. And it just really showcases, and it all takes place literally within like a couple hours time frame. Like the movie it's almost in real time. It's scary. But this movie is just so moving and it's so beautiful. And the music and the honest reality, if you will, of times then. And sadly, this was one of the last live action opportunities we got to see of the late Chadwick Boseman. Wakanda Forever, obviously. But his performance, even though, and I honestly, you know it now, like you see it now, like how frail and how small he was in this movie. And probably some people attributed it to him, like just, you know, slimming down in weight for the sake of the film, for the sake of the role. But I'm pretty sure more than likely is probably because of his illness. But that does not negate any of the fact that his role is powerful in this movie. Mm-hmm. He is a strong performer in this film. I'm pretty sure he's going to get some kind of posthumous award. Because this movie is, it's one of my favorite films of this past year, not just because of its opportunity to showcase like the divisiveness of America back then, but because it is a true exploration of what the blues really means to people. And how well this movie just showcased both the juxtaposition of what something like the blues holds power in because of what it represents and the reality of the world around it. So it was just a beautiful movie. I loved it. However, I am going to kind of double down and give one of my worst ones because one of my worst ones was a Netflix film. And that is Lesson... I had it just right here. By the way, that was...
Lesson 293?
What?
Red Notice?
No, God, no.
That is a worst one, though.
That was not my worst one.
No.
My worst one was... I just saw Malcolm and Marie on Netflix. Lesson 253. Oh, my God.
It's sad thing as we reviewed those like a month apart.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Did. Like, this movie, I thought it wasn't... I didn't think it was going to be this bad. This movie is so...
Zendaya, you can act. We ain't going to deny you that, girl. You can act, but dang, this movie.
Like, whoever decided to make this a release near or around Valentine's Day was not gunning for it to be, like, a stay-together kind of movie. This is the kind of movie you watch, and then after the movie's done, you turn to your significant other and you say... So, I've seen you do that. And then it's all over. It's like game over. Bell rang, the boxing gloves are on, and everybody goes to town. because this movie is so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, every second of this movie, like, you can't even, like, I didn't even realize that, and I don't mean this in a very, like, negative way, but I didn't even realize, like, Zendaya was, like, half naked throughout the whole movie until after the film, and I'm like, she's wearing, like, just a top and no bottoms, and it's like, has she been looking like that this whole movie? Because I've just been worried about them just being done, like, no longer talking, like, go to bed. And that's how much that whole storyline takes away from visually what this film is. Because if you take out all the words, it's visually stunning. Mm-hmm. Like, they're both they're both good-looking people in the film.
And the shots are beautifully set up. There's great shadow. There's amazing light work.
Because the film's done in black and white.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The one thing is, 100%, you are so caught up in the story. And depending upon where you are in therapy or understanding what is going on, this story just, you're just...
It'll trigger you.
I was triggered after she made the macaroni and cheese. And I love macaroni and cheese. This was the year of macaroni and cheese.
It was just so hard to watch. Like, you're seeing all these things happen and you're like, you feel like the third wheel in when you're around another couple who fights.
Yeah, no, if that was their intention of, like, let's place you in the middle of someone else's fight, and you're like, hey, guys, I'm going to leave now. Yeah. Like, that's what you want to do. Yep. You just want to leave the room with the movie playing.
And you're holding the remote, and you're like, is this what you want? Is this what you want? I'll turn it off. Like, it just, every opportunity this film took to either showcase an opportunity of growth, or every moment it could have taken to add a sense of brevity and a sense of lightness to this, or even a sense of deviating from the negativity and the constant, like, the constant barrage of gaslighting to each other, it would just amp it up. Like, it would push it to 11 and not even take that curb slowly. It would just ram around it at like 100 miles an hour, and it didn't stop. Mm-hmm. You would think the movie would die down for a quick second. Nope. And you're like, okay, cool. And then it would just pick back up like a freaking fighter jet just and takes off.
The moment, so the one of the most vivid moments for me is they're fighting, she's made the macaroni and cheese, and she's in the bathtub. And I had already been triggered. She made it down the hallway. I was like, okay, girl, get your things, pop out. And she's in the bathtub, and he comes into the bathroom, and he sits at the edge of the bathtub. And I'm like, he's going to drown you. He's going to drown you. And then you're sitting there and you're either one of two people. Either you're yelling, why aren't you getting up out of the tub? Why aren't you leaving? Why are you still there? Or the other one is like, you better have something sharp under there that you hid in the bottom of the bathtub, because he's going to stab you and you need to stab him back. Like, even thinking about it right now, I have a giant knot in my stomach and so much anxiety, because it was a horribly triggering movie. And I'm in therapy. I am in active therapy.
It was one of those movies that you outwardly ask the question. We all say it here on the show, but like, you actively, constantly, out loud said to yourself, why? 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 Why?
Hey, you
why?
Sound like me.
Yes. I was
last going. Week.
So I mean, that was just that in terms of bad, bad, bad movies. This obviously was a showcase in what not to do around Valentine's Day. You don't release a movie like this. You know what they should have done? They should have released this movie without any words and just play like kind of vaudeville music in the background. No. That would have been it.
But the artist was great.
That's what I'm saying. Amy, do you have a worst one?
Oh my gosh. So I have two, but I'm going to start with my first one that's a best worst one kind of jam, because it followed right on the heels, Malcolm and Marie, Hello Gaslight Season, the invisible flipping man.
Oh, wow, gosh.
From lesson 252. I wasn't even on this episode, people. I could not. I'm going to let y'all know right now. I did not watch this movie until probably later in 2021, because first off, I don't do horror. Second off, this was not an okay. Third off, the main actress, she's brilliant, but I've been I had been watching The Handmaid's Tale. Okay. So, after establishing that, this movie was great in what it showed, but terrible for everybody that has gone through the trauma of abusive gaslighters and just abuse in general. I got to the completion of this movie and he's dead. And I'm like, girl, you didn't check to make sure he's dead. Now that is a problem because I am a survivor of gaslighting as well as different types of abuse in my life. But if I'm in a movie and I'm going, you need to make sure, I know he's bleeding on the floor and he looks dead, but you need to go over and touch him and stab him a couple more times and make sure he's dead. This movie is not okay.
Well, it doesn't help that this movie started off with him faking his own death.
Oh my God. The running and the thing, sneaking out. I wanted her to take the dog. Like, this is a survivor's movie. This is a survivor's movie and everyone's worst. Like, it was brilliantly done for people that love scary, but the fact that there are people that are capable of this and it is IRL, nope.
I think that's kind of why I didn't want to see this initially, because it was like a bunch of people not believing a woman about things that were happening. And I was like,
actively happening in our society. Yeah, let's you know, keep on with that. Let's just know, like, oh, did you see this new Invisible Man? He's not wrapped up in bandages with sunglasses and a fedora. He's not Kevin Bacon trying to get up into things. No.
I mean, when you're hoping that Kevin Bacon walks in.
Yes. Oh, my God. Please. Up,
like,
please.
Even if it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's a rough
movie. Is this like an MCU crossover or something? Like, Kevin Bacon shows up and then the old man.
Whatever. Sure. Universal like, Monsters. Universal Monsters. Kevin Bacon. Come.
I need someone to interrupt this movie and, like, bring a lot of levity or whatever.
Oh,
just,
my gosh.
Boy, when we were young, we just disappeared. We didn't have to use no dang suit.
This is just, you did Malcolm and Marie one week before, and then it was the Invisible Man. And I wasn't on the episode because I was like, no, thank you. Nuh-uh, not going to go there. And this is like, I was triggered in Malcolm and Marie. They showed you literally emotional abuse and verbal abuse on such a classic. Visceral. Like, yeah, it was so just in your head. And then it's Elizabeth Moss, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For the Invisible Man, it was outwardly and inwardly. And I'm like, I can't do this. I can't. I was triggered the entire flipping movie. It was great to put it on screen so other people can see, but the problem is for every single survivor, every person that is actively going through it, all they saw was themselves and their abusers on the screen. And when that is happening, I do not believe that is healthy or garnering any type of good thing for your audience. Kevin Bacon, come back, please.
I don't know. I feel so the interesting thing is that you, after you saw it, were like, you were vehemently like against this movie.
No, I was against it beforehand.
I don't remember beforehand. I just remember we saw it, you were like,
because
did you make me watch this?
No, because you, like, before we watched this movie, you were like, oh, we should watch this. And I was like, I don't think so. Because
good man.
Like, because like I had seen the trailer for this movie and I was like, no, I'm not on board with this. And you're like, oh, no, this movie's like different than I thought. I'm like, okay, well, okay, if it's different than what I think it is. And that's, I remember calling you out. I was like, what did you think this movie was? Because this is exactly what I thought this movie was going to be. And I didn't want to see that. I was not happy. I'm still not happy, actually.
I don't know about both of you. I feel like this was, there are very few opportunities where we get to see our trauma in a way that people can understand. And yes, for people who have gone through it, it is especially triggering. It mm-hmm. is definitely, it's like somebody who is within a court system trying to explain somebody who has been violated or in a very, you know, immense manner, and they have to talk about it. And sometimes when they talk about it, it triggers people. This is a situation where being able to see this for some people who don't understand what gaslighting means, who doesn't understand how manipulation on the most subtle of levels works, how the mindset of somebody who is a master manipulator, mm-hmm. what that looks like, and how it can be misconstrued by so many others and just gone over under the radar. Because let's be honest, there are people out there like that who don't see it. And this was an opportunity in film to say, you know what? Hey, if you haven't seen what that looks like, what manipulation looks like within any kind of dynamic, whether if it's familial or relational, however it is, this is a good indicator. This is a good example of that. And watch this particular character and see how she responds, because that is exactly what happens on the day to day. And I know people who go through these things, who've gone through these things. Amy, have gone through these things. Mm-hmm. And this is, if not a good indicator, a good example for people to have some sense of recognition of what that looks like. Yeah. As triggering as it was.
Yeah, but there's also, as much as you can use it as a cautionary tale or an example, I know that murdering people is bad, so I don't actively watch serial killer things so that I can go hunt down serial killers. That's my personal philosophy on that. That's just, I'm saying, this is in the best, and that's why I have it written literally on my notes, best and worst. Because while it could have been something great, or it is a great tool to be able to give to people, much like our hopes and dreams for Encanto, giving it to family that actually needs to see it, I don't think everyone's going to understand what they're supposed to be picking up on it all the time, or they're going to gloss over it. So that's me. Okay. Now on the flip side, for most ridiculous, just worst ones that will make you both laugh because I'm weirdo, I'm taking it back to March, lesson 258. It was a back-to-back Coming to...
Oh, I'm so glad you brought this up.
And Coming to America 2. Let us establish, first and foremost, the only thing that I loved about this movie was James Earl Jones in his stand-up coffin and his entire wake and everybody singing. Other than that, nobody gets a pass.
This... Go ahead, because I... Go ahead.
Spencer.
No, this... Like... When it was announced, I was like, no, this is going to be bad.
We all know.
I don't know. It's very rare to go make a sequel to something after such a long period and for it to also be good. Mm-hmm. So coming into this hot mess, I knew it was going to be just not great, especially since it's been like, what, 20, 30-ish
years? I think it would have been 30 years at that point.
I wasn't interested in seeing that at all, because like the first movie had kind of wrapped up like, mm-hmm. you know, the story in a nice little like bow. Like, you know, he found like the person he was going to marry and he was like, you know,
and
it was good.
Happy and everything was solid and they went back to Zamunda and it was great. And then Zamunda. We get this where we're like, okay,
this,
no.
This, so here's the worst part of this movie.
Amazon gave them money.
So, yeah, okay, that's the weirdest part around the movie.
Like, Eddie Murphy, you had your time, dude. You're still really funny, but we don't need 20... Eddie Murphy and Eddie Murphy, starring Eddie Murphy with Eddie Murphy, a side of Eddie Murphy, and a short Eddie Murphy pretending to be an old man, like six old men in a barbershop. Like,
it was three.
It could have been six at this point. I don't know. He was the shaman with the nails, and he was the pastor getting people married, and he
You need to be 12 people in a movie.
What was it called? Sexual Chocolate? Is that
no? Yeah, no.
That was the name of the. Oh, that was the name of the band. You're talking about the nasty priest. Okay, here's the worst thing about this movie, other than Amazon gave them money. The worst part about this movie is it took everything that was good about the first film
and delightful
and took a wholesome wholesome film. It wasn't the perfect, you know, film, but it was definitely fun. It embodied like the fun of the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, there was jokes about Jerry curls and crazy, you know, cover band. Exactly. It took everything that was great about that and then it just ruined it with rape. Ultimately,
yes. That's the entire premise. It is not like, oh, we're sowing our wild oats. The man literally got raped and now it's okay. Like, no, it's never okay. It doesn't matter who you are, male or female, it is not okay. and I expected better from Leslie Jones.
Yeah, this movie was just...
I expected it.
Like, this movie took every opportunity to be dirty and lewd gross, really. and
it wasn't
just
even
gross.
Raunchy. It was just gross.
Yeah.
Like the scene when Leslie Jones and her son and their family are at the palace in Zamunda, and the son's like freaking out because there's all these like half naked Zamundans in his chambers and they want to bathe him, and he's freaking out, and Leslie Jones is like, do it, baby, you only live once, do it, blah blah blah, and they're like, oh, okay, this is weird. And then this ginormous Zamundan has been underwater this entire time cleaning the royal privates or something.
Yep.
And it's like, that's not funny. Like, I don't think it's funny, and there's no amount of lack of pride anybody should ever carry to have to wash somebody's privates like that.
Well, there is the entire original line, which is the royal penis is clean, your highness. That comes from the first movie, but it's kind of glossed over in a way that, like, they bathe him. Not like he is boning every single person that's there. It's, you're clean, ta-da. But this was like, yeah, and you're like, ew.
It was really kind of just cringy. Yeah, this was a bad movie. Yep. Like, because we covered both the movies in that same review.
It was back to back.
I hadn't remembered how funny that first one was. And I think it made me just all the more sad after watching the second one.
Yeah, like, if you want to be real sad about something, watch both of those movies back to back.
Yeah.
Because then you'll be happy at first and then very, very sad and disappointed.
Sorry, didn't mean to make you sad, but you asked for worse.
That was a great contender. You literally knocked it out of the park. Good job, intern.
Yeah, I don't want to miss a thing.
Spencer, do you have another bad or good one?
So I think I'm going to end on a positive note.
Oh my gosh. Spencer.
And talk about Spider-Man.
Yay!
I knew it.
Lesson 296.
It
was on my list, so it's perfect. I get to erase it from my note and go.
Yeah. Spider-Man. Like,
he does whatever Spider can.
Like, honestly, really great movie. Like, one of the best ones I saw last year. Well, not just because it's one of the ones I can remember. Because, like, I was talking to everyone about this beforehand. Like, it just, last year seemed to extend into multiple years for me. Because, of, like, I'm, like, looking at this list, I'm like, we did this 4 years ago. Like, that's just how I feel. but, like, No Way Home, like, what a fantastic wrap up to 20 years of Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, with getting like everyone back, like this being the Smash Brothers, everyone is here in this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it was really fantastic to see. Like, especially since they had like such a high bar for a multi Spider-Man movie with Into the Spider-Verse. Just going into this, I was like, you know, how are you going to top it? And they did, only because they had all that history. Yes. If it was like more standalone-ish, I don't think they would have done quite as well. But they did a great job for like what, like how they paid off like the history of Spider-Man in cinema.
Yeah, I think this movie, although it's not a Marvel proper movie, because some will argue it's a Marvel Studios, not a Disney Marvel, but whatever. This is probably on par, if not just slightly a little better than the resolution I had with Endgame. And that's not saying that Endgame didn't have its impact on me. It's not to say that, because I was in the theater with all the rest of them nerds. We all cried. We all screamed. We all shouted. We were all sobbing at the end of it.
I had a lot of drunk people, and do you have a drunk voicemail for me for that?
I do.
Oh, Christ.
No, it was from...
I called somebody when I was drunk, and I was drunk and angry.
It was
Infinity War. Oh. Then somebody else has... Please don't.
You sure?
Then I have somebody else that has Endgame on it where I'm inebriated. But it was pineapple vodka and Sprite. It was really good. Please don't. Please.
I'm listening.
No, please don't play that.
I'm listening.
Okay. But no, I can agree with the impact. There were so many people crying in this movie, and for people, which we've talked about the pop culture impact of Spider-Man and Stan Lee's gift with giving us Spider-Man and everything else that's going on. And this is easily, like I said, it was literally on my list to talk about. I was like, if somebody don't talk about it, I'm going to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't not watch it again. Like, it's brilliant.
I found it. You sure?
Yeah, no.
Look at your face. It's only 16 seconds.
No.
I'm not okay.
Yeah. I'm not okay. I wasn't okay. I was like crying and trying not to swear and saying I'm not okay. But this was brilliant. Yes, Spencer. Yes, there is a Santa Claus and he brought you Spider-Man.
He did. And I was very happy about that. Well, plus, like, you know, that was the movie I've been excited about for this whole year.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it was set as at the end of the year, but it was worth the wait.
It definitely was. Like this, like I said, this one outstretches Endgame just a little bit because of the fact that this spans so much more time. And mind you, even though it's been quite a few years since we've had those other Spider-Men as a part of our regular pop culture, outside of memes.
Bully McGuire.
Yeah.
Many people. That's the easiest cosplay and they all do it.
I feel like this was one of those instances where this gave us, the only thing that could go beyond this and give us much more of that nerd, you know, fanboy, fangirl moment of the ages would be if we were to see something like this involving the X-Men. Mm. But that's next in line, hopefully. But this is one of those instances where you see a character where you remember seeing, like I remember seeing that first Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi one, when I was in high school. And, you know, I don't remember what was going on with the Amazing Spider-Man, but I know as far back, Tobey Maguire was the original Spider-Man for me. And then going on through the years and experiencing everything that's going on now, and now seeing Spider-Man properly within his place that he should be within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and to have this moment happen was like pure wonder and awe, you know. So that's a good one to end off on your list there. Amy, do you have one more to do, good or bad?
Of course I do. I have more than one, but I'm going to try to keep it short. In the year of representation, where it is always...
The year of representation.
It's a year of representation, considering that it was long overdue. Lesson 283, Shang-Chi showed up. You can also piggyback that with Raya the Last Dragon that came in. And this one I did not write down, but I had it. I swear I did. This is the difference between me and
Lesson
Eddie.
Lesson 257.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
this
you.
Is the difference between
me and Eddie. I keep singing. It was awesome to see characters that were long overdue for having... exposure, as well as POCs, Asian representation,
people of color,
who are actively playing the parts and they weren't being whitewashed. The same thing showed up with Raya the Last Dragon, and the representation, the care for culture, the support, it showed up in droves and it did something and reignited a love of both the history and the culture for me. It also was amazing because my daughters, and especially my oldest, finally got to see somebody that looked like her on the screen, and she has been just absolutely over the moon. And also she has a crush on Simu Liu, so that worked out weird and great. But yeah, Shang-Chi was brilliant. The way it was set up, it's funny. Anybody can watch it. It feels great. And Tony Leung does not age. It is.
It's true.
Amazing.
Like, if it turns out like he's like somehow a dark wizard, I'd believe it.
I have on my Netflix list. So apparently he was in a movie called The Great Magician, like from I think it's like from 2008. But he looks exactly the same. And I'm just like, I need to watch this movie. I don't know what it is.
I bet this man's like a real life Eternal.
Well, between that,
he probably is because he's 60.
Well, and what? In the mood for love, he doesn't look that different either. He's a little bit thinner.
He's turning 60 this year.
How is he 60?
He doesn't look it. Great. But yeah, this was the year to.
I think we all wish that.
Oh my gosh, I really wish I did. This was the year for people of color to stand up, stand proudly, and for the communities surrounding these larger fandoms and larger nerddom to acknowledge and to celebrate them. So those were great. Also, Encanto. There we go.
This man is supposed to be 60.
Eddie is just marveling at this man on the screen, and Spencer is shaking his head.
He
can't, right?
Like, he's either a liar or something else is up.
He's fooled a massive amount of people and the internet to believe that.
Pulls us side by side with Donnie Yen.
Donnie Yen?
Yeah. Like, now we're like, internet, this is what we do. Because you can't unsee it. Like,
Donnie Yen is 59 this year.
Yeah. And look at the side by sides on them. Huh. Like, it's so weird, right? And Donnie looks like he's a little bit older than Tony.
Nope.
Oh, he looks super ripped, though.
What the heck? Ripped. That's what happens when you're in Spider-Man.
He's not in Spider-Man.
I want him to be in Spider-Man. He's in my mind in Spider-Man.
Apparently in your mind, he's in something.
Hey, leave it alone. So those are the notes for me. Those. And I know I hate you, Armageddon. I still do. I want to miss a thing. I wanted to miss that thing. I have missed it for years.
I'm glad that you saw that movie.
Oh, my gosh. You just look
your
at me.
Your commentary is so great.
Just you looking at me and laughing. Like, that is all I have to do is, like, I'll bring up, I don't want to miss a thing. And you're like, hey, she suffers.
It's true. You did suffer. Mine is twofold in the vein of nostalgia. Number one, I have to say that one of the most standout opportunities this past year was when me and Spencer were able to get our fathers on the show.
Aww.
For Father's Day. And that was a really interesting and telling conversation and good. I don't want to remove that out of the conversation, but it was definitely fun. We got a chance to talk about pretty much how movies have impacted us, how movies impacted them, how they viewed movies as kids and how it shaped who they are today. And likewise, how it affected us and kind of the type of movies that we grew up with. It was a really awesome conversation. I'm glad we got a chance to do that.
Yeah, that was fun.
And we had mentioned it. I don't know if we had mentioned it on air or we were just talking about it in passing, but we may have to do that for moms one day.
I think you said it in the last episode with the Wachowski ouchie.
Was that? I don't remember.
That was last week. Yeah, that was Resurrection that we don't talk about.
Should also be on the bad list.
That's on the hardcore no-no list.
That's on the forgetting list. As recent as it was, that's on my forgetful. I forgot it even happened.
Oh, the thing is, like, I forgot most of the movie, but I did not forget that Warner Bros. Inserted themselves into their own movie. It was such a wild decision. I'm still shocked by it.
But yeah, that opportunity was so great. And mind you, with everything going on nowadays, like, the opportunity to bring in the people who kind of raised us and were a part of that and help kind of shape who we are today. That was really fun to carry that conversation in the episode and do that. But likewise, on that nostalgia spectrum, the other one that I really want to talk about was a more recent conversation we had. And that was Lesson 292 with Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Because Bustin' makes you feel good. It's the song.
You don't want me to talk about black holes, and yet you're going to go and bring out the most awkward line from that song.
Well, who are you going to call?
Uranus.
We just do this for Spencer now.
Oh, man.
But no, Ghostbusters Afterlife was such a incredible and fun surprise, mm-hmm. because after the horrific events of 2016... And it was. No amount of whomever says what will ever dissuade me from the idea that 2016's Sony's Ghostbuster reboot was any shades of good. Mm. Because it was not. It was absolutely horrifying from every cast of character, even the usage of the previous cast of characters like Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd.
They weren't even used. They were assaulted.
That yeah, that's what assault. I'm saying. There was actual...
Sorry, Kate McKinnon, I like you. Come home.
There were even rumors that like Bill Murray did not want to be on the set, that he had actually wanted to walk off the set, but contractually he had to be there.
See, not everyone can just walk away. Like I was saying.
Contractually. He's tied to that verse. Unlike
who knows?
Dev Patel.
But either way, she's talking about M. Night Shyamalan making a sequel.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen.
How do you know? Looking,
it's not going to happen. I won't allow it.
Spencer has spoken.
I will have a positive anti-letter writing campaign somehow.
We've got access to printers.
So, Ghostbusters Afterlife was such a sweet surprise, and I loved every second of it. It didn't mimic anything about the first one that had already been done. Like, everything about the first one was unique because of its humor, the cast of characters, the people that were a part of it, the different people who like just interacted with each other. There was chemistry. It was beautiful. And then you have like Harold Ramis, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, what's his name?
Winston.
Yeah, Winston. Ernie Hudson. Sorry, I had it in my head.
You found it.
Good job.
I'm just like, Winston.
Thank you. And then Annie Potts. You know, and then what's his name? Seymour. Harold Ramis. No, not Harold.
You already said Harold Ramis.
No, not Harold Ramis.
Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis. That's right.
And Sigourney.
And Sigourney. Like, all those people were incredible in the first film. And the mashup of those characters and the chemistry was just special, to say the least. It was special. And then you fast forward to almost more than 30, 40 years later, and you have this opportunity, and they don't try to replicate things that are forced. They're all natural, and it's just fun. It's a revisit. It's an homage to the original while showcasing something new here. And I know a bunch of people got all up in arms about, like, oh, the ghost of Harold Ramis, and this is Nat.
You know, I could see why someone would be upset, but I was like afraid for a second that they were going to go too far, and then like
that was a lot of the biggest concern, because they were like, if he talks, we're out. We're out.
If he had opened his mouth and said anything, I would have been like, this is unacceptable.
Exactly. I think that was the biggest complaint for a lot of people, was that they felt that it wasn't, that they showed his, in showing his face, and showing fully his face, and then the lingering goodbye, it was too much. Mm. And I was like, okay, I understand you could think that was too much. I was like, but that's almost less than where WB would have gone.
Yeah.
WB would have had a monologue, and they would have taken old like audio from the first two and forced it in there so that you heard them. And then like,
I do not want Hollywood to move into this. Like, yeah, we're going to just have like these dead actors and just put them back in and then make them talk. Like, like they died. Leave them alone, please.
Yes. They're in their grave. Just let them do the thing. But this was so well done. The cast was so lovingly picked. There were callbacks everywhere. There was such a brevity to everything that was going on, and it felt like an adventure.
Yeah.
It captured a lot of that 80s spirit that I love, and then it introduced characters in such an organic way that it didn't feel like we were being forced into anything. Like Paul Rudd, I didn't even realize he was the key master until the ring of keys jingled, and I was like, how did I not see that? And then the terrible nod to Baskin Robbins, and I was like, Baskin Robbins knows. I'm like, dude, we see your joke, just keep going, buddy, you're doing good.
His Rick Moranis run, the whole movie just oozed with fun nostalgia, and no pun intended. It's fun nostalgia and just a sweet remembrance of a great time that was past, you know, and it just, it brought you back to that moment. And even reading about it, like the daughter, the eldest daughter of Harold Ramis, has actually come out and said, you know, she actually enjoyed seeing her dad in the film, that it was cathartic for her, like an opportunity to finally say goodbye. And it's beautiful in the movie. And mind you, when I saw the film, I cried because I was like, this is the movie that we have needed for so long, not only to wash our mouth out of that 2016 fiasco, but to also give us, like his daughter said, closure for one of the most unique and fun Ghostbusters out there. You know, for all every fan, everybody knows Egon. Everybody aspire. There are people out there who would aspire to be like Egon. You know, get back. I'm a scientist. You know, all these things, you know, about that whole team. Everybody saw the incredible character that Harold Ramis created and wrote. And this was an opportunity to say thank you and, you know, just wish him well. And that's one of my top picks for 2021. So, nice. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Film Philosophers as we dive in headfirst to 2022 with this unique and wonderful perspective of hopefully cinema gets better as the year comes on. We got a lot of things coming up. Do you guys have any prospects for what you're looking forward to in 2022?
It's the Michelle
Michelle Yeoh.
Is it Everything Everywhere All at the Same Time?
Yeah, Everything Everywhere All at Once or something like that.
Yeah,
we are so flipping excited for that.
Like, that's the movie I'm ready to go for right now.
And then Into the Spider-Verse 2.
Yes, that's at the end of this movie.
October. Yes, this is the end. I'm excited to kind of get feelers out for Multiverse of Madness.
Yep.
And that'll be May. I keep saying March, but it'll be May. I don't care about you, Morbius. I know you got pushed back to April, but
I mean, the Black Panther sequel coming up.
I'm very concerned about that.
I am in so many places on that I can't give an honest direction on it. Oh no, that one already came out. The Macbeth that came from A24 with Denzel Washington
that's 2021.
Eddie, you got anything here?
I mean, I'm just looking at the ones that we see here, and like, you got Black Adam coming out this year.
Oh shoot, I'm gonna be in trouble about that one if it doesn't go well.
You got the final film in the trilogy of Halloween with Halloween Ends.
Oh no, I have to watch that on the night of. Not again. Yep.
I mean, you got the interesting Sonic 2 with Tails.
Still surprised. That was a good movie.
Knuckles.
And then you have Jordan Peele's other movie that's coming out called Nope.
I have not heard about this one.
Not much has come out about it, to be honest. All that's come out is just the poster.
Nope. In other words, that's the cast. It's Nope.
Oh, damn, Clueless.
So. I'm excited to see what the year has, and I'm looking forward to seeing how cinema continues to evolve and how opportunities for us to safely go into theaters continues to become an opportunity for us and for people like Spencer. So
we'll see how this year goes. It's not looking good off the cusp, just so you know.
Straight from the jump, it ain't looking as best as we could hope it to be, but we are trying to be optimistic.
We are, Spencer.
Well, as Jordan Peele once said, nope.
Wow. So, I don't even know how to... So, yeah. Here's to looking towards the great things of 2022 and hoping that you and your family and friends continue to grow and get out there and try to see as many movies as possible, because let's be honest, we got some big heavy hitters coming this year, and we'd love to know your thoughts. Check us out on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. You can also check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. There we got all of our episodes, over 290 episodes. Check us out, let us know what you think. And we'd love to know your thoughts on any previous episodes that we have. Also, you can you can follow us on any streaming platform, wherever podcasts are heard. We got Google Play, Libsyn, iTunes, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn. Check us out there. Give us a subscribe. And we hope to hear from you next week. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm still here, intern Amy.
Class dismissed.